Barbecue Baraboo.
CBS News Brief. The search expands from New York to Canada for the suspect in Wednesday's mass shooting at a bar and a bowling alley in Lewiston, Maine. Loved ones are coming to grips with the loss of mothers, daughters, fathers, and sons, like Arthur Barnard's.
He was supposed to leave with me. 10 minutes later, I got a phone call. He was great, Dad.
Israel's conducted another night of raids on Hamas targets in Gaza. CBS's Deborah Patta.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says preparations for a ground invasion into Gaza are underway, although he cannot say exactly when it will happen.
The Red Cross says its medics have entered Gaza for the first time since the war began. The next move, the feds. CBS's Jill Schlesinger.
While personal income was up 0.3% in September, spending roared higher by 0.7%.
Central bankers meet next week to consider more interest rate hikes. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. More than $388 million worth of key construction projects around Wisconsin are getting the green light from the State Building Commission. They include new buildings and upgrades at state parks, prisons, universities, and other state-owned buildings. There'll be security improvements at Taycheedah Women's Prison. Work will also get started on a new Wisconsin History Center on Madison's Capitol Square. Tomorrow is Prescription Drug Take-Back Day in Wisconsin. People who have old prescription drugs sitting around can bring them to one of 140 events happening around the state. There are also almost 500 drop boxes where people can leave their old medicines anytime. Attorney General Josh Call says Wisconsin is consistently one of the national leaders in the safety effort, and it makes a difference. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Ethics Committee held a long debate on Thursday regarding $20 cash donations. Under Wisconsin law, anonymous political donations are limited to just $10. However, many of those donations are collected in cash at fundraising tables, and how to handle a $20 bill being found in one of the jars is unclear. One of the options that was proposed was to have the campaign committee donate the entire $20 donation to either the Common School Fund or a charitable organization. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has announced the appointment of 30 members to the Task Force on Workforce and Artificial Intelligence. The task force was created to investigate how artificial intelligence will affect Wisconsin workers and businesses and find the best way to integrate the new technology to benefit all parties. The first public meeting of the Task Force on Workforce and Artificial Intelligence will take place on Monday, October 30th at 4:30 p.m. in Madison. And that's what you need to know. I'm James Kelly, WCFW News.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Bucks begin the season with a win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks started off with an early lead, then had to battle back to get to a 118-117 win over the 76ers. The Bucks' newest member, Damian Lillard, came up with 14 points in the final 4 minutes to get the victory.
And all the way down to the very last play where I got fouled and I went to the free throw line, they inbounded it to Giannis, and I was just kind of reading him like, you know, what you want to do? And he was like, come get the ball.
NFL, the Packers play the Vikings Sunday at noon at Lambeau Field. The Packers' Christian Watson on why the Pack have lost their last three games.
What's been, you know, detrimental for us so far is, you know, the lack of, you know, growing enough each week.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers host number 3 ranked Ohio State tomorrow night at 6:30. Head coach Luke Fickell.
Closing the gap. I think that we're always looking for those gaps in whatever it is, whether you're an individual, you're a team, you're a, you know, an offense, you're always trying to close the gap.
That's Wisconsin head coach Luke Fickell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Mostly cloudy right away this morning. We'll see a little off and on sunshine here through the afternoon. Our high in the low 50s this morning. We're going to drop into the upper 30s to low 40s by late this afternoon. So today is a big transition day. Tonight, 29. Tomorrow, cloudy with some snow showers in the afternoon and a high of 37. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 48.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. If anyone knows what's on tap, it's the Chippewa Valley. We're talking about everything that's on tap in your world today. 93.5, The Tap.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse to let you go.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday means Fridays with my co-host Sandy Williams. So Sandy, man, we have to talk about, we clearly have to talk about what appears to be an escalation in what is happening in the Middle East. United States carriers, some airstrikes. In Syria and Iran, I was reading about some of our troops had been injured. They were fired on, and so we struck back.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We've got troops, we find out, in Syria, and apparently we've had troops camped in Syria, special ops kind of troops, camped there to try and make sure that ISIS doesn't rear its ugly head again. But it's not something that we in the public are necessarily aware of. Maybe there are congressional committees that are brought up to date on where we have troops and what numbers there are. But we have troops in harm's way in Syria, and there are the Iranians obviously are involved with supporting some of the dissidents in Syria that are some of the troublemakers as far as the United States is concerned. And so apparently attributable to some of those Iranian-based troops in Syria, there have been attacks on American outposts in Syria and injuries to some Americans.
So, Sandy, do you think this is a continuation of the war on terror, and that's why those guys are still
well.
There?
That's my understanding that it's well right. Not war on terror, and also just ISIS. ISIS was this caliphate effort to create a large caliphate in the Middle East, and it was pretty successful until it was thwarted in Syria by the joint activities of the Syrians, the Russians, the Americans. Who basically laid it to rest, and now we apparently have American troops still camped there. But the attacks by the Iranians on the Americans, or the Iranian-backed people in Syria on the Americans, seems to be potentially related to this issue in Israel, and I think it's kind of the converse. We've sent aircraft carriers to try and make sure that Hezbollah and other Iranian-backed groups in the Middle East don't become involved in Israel. And I think that the Iranians were doing this to try and hold the Americans at bay and let them know that there would be a problem. I think it's kind of a flexing of the Iranian muscles. And that's pretty much the way the White House described the situation. They said, we've had this attack. We felt we had to make the attack. Austin, the defense secretary, right, said this. But he said, you know, we are not interested in a confrontation. And so I think that was sort of a public way of saying, look, tit for tat here, but let's not let this thing get out of hand.
Well, the United States carried out airstrikes targeting two facilities linked to Iranian-backed militias in eastern Syria. For those of you who aren't aware, last night, following a series of drone and rocket attacks against U.S. forces in the region, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said Thursday the airstrikes directed by President Joe Biden following injuries to 21 American troops during the drone and rocket strike in Iraq and three in Syria by Iran-backed militia groups between October 17th and the 24th. One American, a U.S. contractor, died from a cardiac incident while sheltering in place during one of those attacks. So, Sandy, we keep hearing our nation and our leaders saying we don't want this thing on different fronts. And what is taking place, Israel is now being fired upon by Lebanese fighters.
Hezbollah, which is an Iranian-based group in Lebanon, and up at the Golan Heights, have always been centered up there, which is right at the very edge of Israel at the north end. And there have been skirmishes up there, and there have been historically skirmishes up there. And for a while, Israel was occupying a part of Lebanon up there to hold Hezbollah Bay up there. So this is kind of an ongoing problem between Israel and Hezbollah. And so there has been a worry that somehow that they would become involved in this as well. So far, it's been quite contained in terms of the level of skirmish between them. And while it's been ongoing, it's not been that far outside of the norm.
Well, you know, it's kind of been ramped up now. And let me ask you, Sandy, it's a dangerous time. Is it safe to say that?
Well, it's surely a dangerous time. And the world is polarizing. The world is resorting to force more often than it did in the past. We've got strident problems between various conservative religious views that are beginning to hold sway and become warlike in terms of the outcomes. We've got a country like Israel, which has become more stridently right and possibly more stridently against the notion of a two-state solution. I think everyone believes that Netanyahu, when he ran last time, was basically, at least subliminally, running against the two-state solution, which in some respects might have been one of the things that was that bred the current problem.
You know, Sandy, I heard President Biden say, and America is saying now, after this ends, you know, we're supporting Israel, but after this ends, the two-state solution, it's got to be worked out. And I heard the United States say, representatives of the United States say, well, maybe we took our eye off the prize here over an extended period of time with not even addressing the two-state issue. And that maybe at the root of all of these things happening might have been that.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that at the root of this is the fact that we've had this festering sore without a solution, and that everyone around the world does believe that a two-state solution is the solution to this festering sore. I think that it's become difficult to talk about it at this time. It's a little bit like talking about gun control at a time of a killing in terms of the way the NRA deals with it. And Israel probably is not happy to have us talking about two-state solution in this particular context. But there can be little, and in fact, I said last week that to me, the silver lining of this whole thing is that possibly there will become an increased amount of world pressure to push Israel in the direction, and Palestine and the Palestinians in the direction of getting the two-state solution done.
You know, Sandy, it is, the United Nations is now weighing in and saying, for heaven's sakes, we've got to do something. I think many Americans don't know, Sandy, the makeup of the Palestinian people. The age, the sexual makeup.
Yeah, I mean, the Gaza is this very small area, 140 square miles, Milwaukee County in size, 2.7 million people, 40% of them under 15 years of age, 20% of them are more elderly, okay? Over half of them women. And so it's not, and 65% unemployed. It has no capacity to be an industrious country because it is entirely surrounded by Israel, other than the 8-mile border it has with Egypt, which is also sealed, and it's surrounded by fence, by barbed wire, by razor wire, by guard towers.
It's kind of like they're in prison, right?
Well, everything that goes in and out of Gaza is monitored and controlled by the Israelis. And so it doesn't have an industry, 65% unemployed. It doesn't have the capacity for jobs. So let's just picture what just try to visualize what kind of conditions those people are living in. They're basically living based on the United Nations' capacity to make sure that food is introduced into the country in sufficient quantities for them to live.
Sandy, it is, and what is taking place is Gaza is being leveled. It's clearly going to be leveled, right?
The last week we were reporting and worried about the fact that there was the Israelis had told the northern Gazans to retreat to southern Gaza for safety. And this week there's a talk about a military invasion into southern Gaza. So apparently there's no part of Gaza that is off limits. And the fact is that warfare in a congested place the size of Milwaukee County with 2.8 million people is impossible to carry out without a huge risk to civilians. And the problem I see is that Hamas is a terrorist group. Hamas has committed some heinous things. It's in every way the things they did smacked of what Al-Qaeda has done or what ISIS was doing, which is horrifying. But the numbers of people who are actively involved in Hamas is nowhere near a significant number as compared to the 2.8 million Palestinians who live in the Gaza district. So they're basically chasing and trying to eradicate needles in a haystack, but they aren't going to be able to avoid affecting a whole lot of that haystack.
Well, collateral. And, I've never, liked the term collateral. When we're talking about people, right?
I mean, people who are killed collaterally are still dead.
Yeah, and they're humans, right?
Yes.
And when you use the term collateral, then it somehow softens what it is or hardens, what it is. But I just have never bought the term collateral. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. It means Fridays with Sandy Williams. You can join the conversation.
Now I'll get it.
Yeah, you're going to get it now.
Is 93.5 The Tap.
Up US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
Join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And let's go to the phone lines and Ali from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Ali. How are you doing?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you?
Just fine. You say what, sir?
So I'm just confused how, you know, this can all be resolved if we just get us two-state solution, and everybody there have equal rights.
Sandy, you want to?
Well, I mean, I'm sorry. Did you say, Ali, that you thought it could be resolved that way, or
he didn't think it could be resolved?
Oh, well, you mean you don't see the pathway to that? I'm just trying to understand what you're saying, Ali.
Yeah. There is a pathway. The pathway is stop bombing Gaza, stop killing innocent men and women and children, and instead of U.S. vetoing it every time it's a ceasefire, come up with a solution.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do think that there is a need for the world, Israel and Palestine, to sit down and be committed to the outcome of developing the details for a two-state solution. And I'm sure that, you know, the devil is always in the details. And I'm not privy to what all the problems in those details are, but I'm sure some of them are geography in terms of just what the geography of those states would be. But I do think that the world is standing ready to guarantee the safety of the two states if the parties can reach agreement on those particular issues. And I'm sure that it takes Israel being serious about reaching that solution as well to get all the way to that outcome. But, you know, sitting from where we sit here in Milwaukee or in Wisconsin, it's hard to understand all the details. But what is clear is that there needs to be a firm resolution on the part of all the parties to get there. And if that exists, then you can do it.
Well, then I think, Ali, what you're saying is clearly that if now is the time that, you know, the world is saying we need to put a tap on this and we need to stop the bombing and, you know, because so many innocent people suffering behind this, and it's not, even if they stop the bombing today, the fact that so many people are without food and water and shelter and exposed to, you know, all of the waste, human waste and those kind of things long-term, it's a crisis that they'll be talking about for decades. You're right that they should call for a ceasefire, but, you know, I don't know who can force it.
Well, obviously, the U.S. has a great deal of sway, but so do other countries, and we just need to. There needs to be a firm resolution and commitment on the part of all the parties to get there, and it can happen. And I guess I've been dismayed by the fact that we can't ever seem to get that level of commitment to the solution. We get lip service about it, we have talking about it, but as long as the conditions exist, which do exist there, this will be a festering sore, which will create these kinds of problems periodically.
And the other part of this is, as long as this keeps going on, the more opportunity for it to spread. Sandy, is it safe to say that?
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly the security of the world, the security of the United States, is related to not having problems that can boil over into broad areas and into broad conflict. And, you know, that risk exists in Ukraine, and now it exists in the Mideast. And we pray it doesn't develop in the Pacific as well. But, you know, the United States has to figure out how to deal with situations in a manner that can avoid the potential for that kind of confrontation.
Ali, go ahead, sir.
Yes. So let me say this. It can be resolved. If the U.S. stops supporting Israel, that's for one. We can, you know, then we can maybe sit down and
That's not going to happen.
Hold on. I understand it's not going to happen. See, I was overseas 6 years ago, and I went to Palestine and West Bank, and I went to Israel because I got family in both states. So in the state, in West Bank and Israel. So what I learned is in the West Bank, where there is no Hamas, we're still being terrorized. Our water was cut off on us. I know my water, where I was staying, was cut off for a week. And there's no Hamas there. And remember, this is about 6 years ago. So I'm confused how all the Israelis have different rights than the Palestinians.
I would say, Ali, man, you know, thanks for the call. And these issues are major issues that clearly need to be worked out. It continue to happen and will continue to happen until this is figured out.
I think one thing you point out that is important is that the world continue to focus on the realities of the situation and make sure that we pierce through the rhetoric, pierce through the stories, and make sure we understand what is really happening and wherever it's happening, fact-based, right? And I do think that has been a problem with respect to that area of the world, in that we've continued to look at things through either one prism or the other, and we need to look at everything there through an objective prism.
And Sandy, I agree totally. People are people. Human beings are human beings, and they should all be treated the same. And so I'm with you on that, Ali. It clearly is, and that's the reason we supposedly have a United Nations, I guess, Sandy, where the nations can collectively talk about what is right, what is wrong, and even though they may not have the power to force the changes necessary, the nations coming together should be able to be free to speak about what is in the best interest of humanity, right?
Well, yeah. I just think the problem there is thorny. And as long as something like Gaza exists, so long as we have the ambiguity of the Palestinian condition, there will be problems. And so what we need to do is deal with the ambiguity and remove it.
All right, we got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. Is the number. My co-host Sandy Williams is with me. We'll be right back.
Lodge and Carson Park. The entire Chippewa Valley is tapping in to the station talking about your hometown and all of Wisconsin. 93.5 The Tap.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. People in Wisconsin can expect heating bills to go down by as much as 21%. That's according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. A spike in gas prices made last winter the most expensive ever for home heating. Even with the price drop, the Journal Sentinel reports this winter is still shaping up to be the third most expensive on record. Actual heating bills will depend on the weather and other factors. The Wisconsin Task Force on Childhood Obesity turns its attention to diet and exercise today. Doctors with the Wisconsin Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics and SSM Health are testifying today in Milwaukee. So are officials from the YMCA. The task force is looking for new tools, laws, or grants that can help with the public health challenges caused by obesity. I'm Terry Bell. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WCFW News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin residents who use natural gas to heat their homes may see a 20% decrease in heating costs this year, but experts still predict an expensive winter. Historic price data from the United States Energy Information Administration shows heating costs are still expected to be the third most expensive recorded winter. About two-thirds of all Wisconsin households use gas furnaces for heating, but customers who use electric or propane to stay warm could also see a small heating bill decrease. Proposed legislation in the Wisconsin State Senate would shift the financial burden of impounding the vehicles of reckless drivers to the drivers themselves. Currently, law enforcement and residents are bearing the cost of impounding vehicles. State Senator Andre Jacques, who proposed the bill, says people are fed up with reckless driving and the perpetrators of reckless driving should be the ones footing the bill. The legislation has passed a state Senate committee and will soon head to the full Senate and Assembly. And that's what you need to know. I'm James Kelly, WCFW News.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Bucks begin the season with a win. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks started off with an early lead, then had to battle back to get to a 118-117 win over the 76ers. The Bucks' newest member, Damian Lillard, came up with 14 points in the final 4 minutes to get the victory.
And all the way down to the very last play where I got fouled and I went to the free throw line, they inbounded it to Giannis, and I was just kind of reading him like, you know, what you want to do? And he was like, come get the ball.
NFL, the Packers play the Vikings Sunday at noon at Lambeau Field. The Packers' Christian Watson on why the Pack have lost their last three games.
What's been, you know, detrimental for us so far is, you know, the lack of, you know, growing enough each week.
College football, the Wisconsin Badgers host number 3 ranked Ohio State tomorrow night at 6:30. Head coach Luke Fickle.
Closing the gap. I think that we're always looking for those gaps in whatever it is, whether you're an individual, you're a team, you're a, you know, an offense, you're always trying to close the gap.
That's Wisconsin head coach Luke Fickle. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers.
Mostly cloudy right away this morning. We'll see a little off and on sunshine here through the afternoon. Our high in the low 50s this morning. We're going to drop into the upper 30s to low 40s by late this afternoon. So today is a big transition day. Tonight, 29. Tomorrow, cloudy with some snow showers in the afternoon and a high of 37. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 46.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Local talk about our hometown and all of Wisconsin has gone untapped until now. You're on 93.5 The Tap. Make sure and tell your friends.
Yeah.
welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You know, we were talking about the war in Iraq. Help me out, Sandy. In Gaza.
Gaza, yeah.
Yeah, in Israel. And it just, for all the world, Sandy, we've been around a little while, you and I, and we've seen different skirmishes in that part of the nation, in that part of the world. They come up, and then they flame out, and then people come to their senses with help from different nations. But yeah, it doesn't look like...
Well, this one is different in that the outcome that Israel is talking about, this total annihilation of Hamas, that's one thing to say that,
right.
But when you look at what it is that they'll have to do to accomplish that, it's a horrifying,
right,
kind of a process. And the world, I think, is standing by and is very worried about this. And I think that from Israel's standpoint, they need to be careful about how they carry out whatever it is they do next, because Israel does depend on the goodwill of the world in many respects, and the goodwill of the United States, and I think our goodwill can be counted upon, but they don't want to test it too much, and they clearly could if they decided to mount an attack on Gaza that appeared to all the rest of the world as if it was a level of atrocity that was totally disproportional to what had been experienced in the Hamas raids. So I think that's a problem. I think the microscope and the focus, everybody's binoculars in the world are looking at Israel, and in many respects, they're now not looking at Ukraine, and Ukraine is taking a back seat. And here in the United States, we've got this problem of now sort of a partisan divide about whether there ought to be continued funding of Ukraine. And while I've been a skeptic about the foreign policies that we employed that got us into the situation and got Ukraine into the situation they're in with Russia and the war and our support of it, I certainly don't think that the United States can maintain its world stature if it were to do something as unpredictable and erratic as to be backing Ukraine to the hilt and to suddenly stop mid-war and to by that action essentially dictate an outcome in a war.
Well, but Sandy, it looks for all the world like that's what the Republican side, the Republicans want.
This is again back to my problem of end game. Okay, we got into the Ukraine situation without a clear end game. We got into our policies in Eastern Europe without a clear vision of our end game and our commitment. We are now proceeding in the situation in Ukraine without a clear endgame, and the Republicans now want to, some of them want to stop funding altogether, which is their version of an endgame, but it's certainly not a responsible one. It's not the kind of endgame that anyone would have designed up front, okay? And my problem with U.S. endgames is that we ought to have endgames that we design up front so that they are objectives and not simply happenstance outcomes, because our happenstance outcomes, when we have decided to flex our military muscle around the world, have been very bad.
You know, Sonny, there's a broad enough segment of the Republican electorate that really wants to end the flow of these resources. I mean, so this is not just some pipe dream that people want to pull the plug. It's real. Joe Biden clearly, and they tied in these the resources for Ukraine and
Israel,
$60 billion to Ukraine, $40 billion to Israel, and that's not going to happen because Republicans in the House aren't going to vote for that.
Well, Johnson, apparently, one of the things he said after he was named Speaker was that he was interested in splitting those two expenditures into two parts so they could be debated separately. And so that obviously would put the Ukrainian funding at greater risk and greater peril. You know, one of the things that has troubled me is that the Mitch McConnell, in supporting the expenditures, became sort of openly selling the cynicism that people have talked about privately, which is the argument that's being made by McConnell and is now being made by the Biden administration for those expenditures is that it's very good for the U.S. economy, that funneling all that money into support for those countries ends up being spent back in the United States on munitions and on our war industry, and that what we're doing in the process of this is profiting in our war industry, creating more jobs in our war industry, and increasing our capacity to essentially our defense capacity and our capacity to carry out war. So people have talked privately about profiteering, war profiteering, but we've never talked quite this openly about the fact that a reason we ought to do this is not foreign policy driven, but economically driven.
Let's go to the phone lines, and David from Mequon. Go ahead, David.
Good morning again. So I'll just say this. We seem to fall in the trap. The one thing, and I don't know if you agree with this, Sandy, or not, but the Biden administration has been playing footsie with Iran for quite a few years now. They were trying to revive the nuclear deal Obama, you know, had in place, knowing the fact that they have been doing basically a proxy war during the immediate time. And I think, to your point with the end game, there is no end game with this, because he hasn't laid, and that is a huge problem, because it's like indefinite. It's sort of like Afghanistan all over. And then I think, consequently, when we did make that messy withdrawal with Afghanistan, the bad guys took notice, and they are now pushing, you know, things. And like you said, when you're trying to appease a country like Iran, which I never would have done to begin with, you run into a lot of troubles. And I think, again, it's back to the same old policies. And to your point with Mitch McConnell, we're going to just keep funding all this stuff. And it's a actual, you know, war makes a lot of money for a select few people. And, you know, that's one thing that I hope going forward that we recognize, that this is, it's going to get worse before it gets better, unfortunately.
Okay,
there is no game plan.
Well, let me say that I do think that Obama's administration when they formulated and entered into the treaty with Iran, did have an end game. And the end game was to basically try to assimilate Iran into, and in other words, de-sequester it from the, you know, we had sequestered Iran and pushed it into the corner. And so the notion was, the end game was to uncorner them and to bring them into the world of commerce, and to thereby defang them, because, you know, if they become interdependent in the Western world and in the Western commercial world, they become less capable of being outlaws. Okay, and I think that was a worthy end game, and I think it was actually beginning to work. And I think that the way you can decriminalize rogue nations is to derogue them. And Iran is an interesting conundrum of a country. We picture it as this totally religious Islamist country that is driven by the Ayatollah. But the facts of Iran is that the vast portion of its population is very secular. The significant majority of women do not wear hijabs. The country is ready to be Western and wants to be Western. And so I do think there was an end game there, and I think the way that the end game got interrupted was to pull out of that treaty and to re-sequester Iran into the corner. You're right that a cornered Iran is not a country that you want to appease directly, but I think there was an end game that failed only because of our policies.
All right, Tom from LA.
Yeah, good morning, guys. So again, I want to understand. I'm more of the point of wanting to understand this. So basically Gaza is full of the Palestinians, and that's what was given to them, was this land called Gaza. And but I also understand that the Israelis and the Palestinians actually live side by side, and they actually do get along. In fact, some people are probably married, and they probably have children together. And
well. Just like let me tell you. I think nearly 2 million of the Israelis who live in Israel, not in Gaza or the West Bank, are Palestinian. Okay, so that there are a significant number of Palestinians who are Israeli citizens who obviously coexist and get along, and then there are people in the West Bank who are able, who pass through in and out of the West Bank and are employed in other parts of Israel outside of the West Bank and in Jerusalem. So you're right. There is a lot of coexistence there. The extent to which land was given to Palestine or granted them, I mean, after 1948, after the initial British effort to establish Israel and then the without putting a military in to suppress the conflict that developed between Palestinians and Israelis, it was kind of left up to the Palestinians and Israelis to figure it out, okay? And they figured it out based on Western support. And ultimately, Israel was, the lines were drawn for Israel, and the original lines for Israel looked quite a bit different. You know, the West Bank was Jordan until 1967. The Golan Heights were Syria and Jordan before 1967. And so things have changed. And they have changed dynamically as the result of the conflicts in the area.
So what I don't understand, Sandy, is, okay, so from what I understand from talking to some of my Jewish friends and my Palestinian friends, that basically the reason why there are such strict guidelines in terms of being able to go from Gaza to Israel is because of the fact that that's where a lot of the Hamas terrorists can be included in with the people from Palestine, and they, you know, they can come into Israel, and they're very, very much, you know, checked over and everything like that before they go into Israel, because that's where a lot of terrorism has come from. That's where a lot of bombs have been blown up and things like that that have happened. You know, by people, you know, going basically like from Minnesota to Wisconsin, as an example, right? It's just, it's right over the border there. And again, we're talking about border stuff again. And it'd be nice if everybody just got along and we didn't have terrorists, but we do.
Well, but I mean, I think this, I think the conditions in Gaza have obviously contributed to the level of terrorism that that is bred in Gaza. Okay. So, I mean, the situation there is just far more complicated than Americans can wrap their mind around, because we aren't there, we don't experience it, we don't live in it, we don't see it. And there is obviously a great deal of potential goodwill between the Palestinians at large and the Israelis at large. But the situation in Gaza, which is
quality of life,
which
right?
is very, very different than the situation in the West Bank. And so the West Bank does not have the same level of problem, and has a different government, and far less terrorism than Gaza does. But can I describe the reasons for it? No, except that I've got to believe that the conditions in Gaza have a great deal to do with the situation.
All right. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
You told me that you want to leave me.
The Tap. Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is 93.5 The Tap.
Welcome back to what is the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show and my co-host Sandy Williams. Sandy, I can't believe, man, the time flies, right?
It does.
I mean, it really does. And we've been talking. Let's go back to the phone lines. Hey, Ken from Sturgeon Bay, what's going on, man?
Good morning, gentlemen. Have you heard how Joe is doing? I saw on some news this morning he fell off some steps again.
Well, you know, for those who are looking to find out how Joe is doing and keeping track of how many times he fell up the stairs, I'm a few years younger than Joe, and guess what? I've fallen up the stairs and down the stairs. What about you?
So have I. I was just wondering if you guys heard.
Okay. Well, no, man. I mean, you know, what do we want
to
see?
But actually, when you think about it, falling up the stairs is a lot more prudent than falling down the stairs. So, I didn't see that. Was it a news flash? Was it a...
Well, you know, Sandy, all of
actually, these... I did see on social media a picture of Tommy Tuberville falling down the stairs. and he's been a critic. He's been a critic of stair falling. So,
Tommy Tuberville. Yeah. You know, but Sandy, I am really fearful of where we're headed in this world if we don't hurry up and get our hands. Those, you know, 40 years ago, Sandy, who created the SALT treaties, they knew.
Yeah.
Right? They knew that we could never get into a point or a position where we get to this point, right? And they didn't have anywhere near the kind of weapons that we...
Well, I think the thing that Pax Americana, this is just a jump, the SALT Treaty was done between the Soviet Union and the United States, who viewed themselves as co-equals.
Right.
And we viewed ourselves as co-equals on the ground with our military as well as our ballistic missiles. And after the 1990s, the collapse of the Soviet Union, the United States developed a view, which was probably realistic, that we had a military that was bar none, okay? We were militarily far more capable than any other country in the world. And we continue to have that situation now. But that military inequality, unfortunately, makes it somewhat more likely that the nuclear button comes into play because... For instance, Russia. We are not the military equal with Russia. They are not our equal, okay? And in everything but the nuclear arsenal. So if Russia feels like they are pushed to the wall and pushed to the limit, they will not believe that they can defend themselves in any fashion other than use of the nuclear weapon. So in some respects, our world today, because of the inequality of power between the various powers in the world, might make it more likely rather than less likely that nuclear arms could be brought to bear. So I think our foreign policy has to take that into account, and we have to be careful how we flex our muscles because we don't want to corner nuclear powers, okay?
Well, you know what frightens me, Sandy, is that the people who need to hear that, they're not looking at it that way. And they are. They're still flexing their muscles and their power and their might. And we as Americans are saying, yeah, we got the might, we got the power. No, when you corner somebody.
Right.
You know.
Cornered dogs bite.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you don't corner a dog and you don't want to. And so we have to be careful. Taiwan out there, a sleeping problem that we need to figure out the end game, and we need to figure it out soon, and it can't be based on NFL rah-rah kind of views of things. It has to be based on reality, real politics, real politic in terms of hegemony of countries around the world. We have to begin to recognize China for what it is, and we have to be careful.
Well, Sandy, we also have to begin to realize that the power that these nations possess, including us, could turn the lights out on all of this. And those people who created the SALT treaties, even though they knew that we don't all, you know, agree on everything, whatever it is we don't agree on, it's not worth us destroying one another.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so how do we get that kind of understanding today? Those men were able to sit down and hammer that out. You see that happening?
Well,
now?
Like I said, they hammered it out based on a situation where they thought there was equality sitting across the table, equal power.
Right.
So it was a bit like arm wrestling in a fair arm wrestling fight. And unfortunately, the United States has developed a self-image that does not reflect that sort of respect for the alternative, for the powers that's sitting across the table. And we have to develop a new view that takes into account realities. And some of those realities involve the danger of just overflexing our muscles.
But I got to ask you, my friend, you said the United States, the American people don't ever see us in that light. They can't see us as possibly being somebody who is kind of creating the environment, right?
Well, you mean in terms of the world environment?
Yeah, that the others feel threatened.
Well, I just think we have a lot of trouble viewing the world through other people's eyes. The United States, in our foreign policies and generally, have a great deal of trouble exercising the empathy of understanding the situation and the position of everyone else. And diplomacy requires that you look at the world through not only your own eyes, but everyone else's eyes, and get an understanding of what they're seeing and feeling and what their realities are. And we need to get back to that kind of a role in the world.
So there are lessons to be learned here. We got to go. Thank you, everybody who made the show go. Thank you, as always, Sandy. Thank all of you in the new markets. We're excited about, you know, joining you. And you can always join us. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Calvin, for another great weekend. A week. And we'll see you guys again on Monday.
On air, 93.5 FM. Online, thetap.com. And on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. my way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WCFW Chippewa Falls and WRPQ Baraboo.